We would give your careful and your prayerful attention to our brother Clem.
Well, thank you, Bill, and good morning, everyone. It's certainly good to see each of you here this day. For those of you that like to follow along in the scriptures, I'm going to set up camp in the 27th chapter of Acts. We're going to spend most of our time there, so if you want to follow along, just find that and mark it. And I've entitled this morning's sermon, Weathering the Storm. I would imagine that probably most everyone, if not actually everyone here this morning, at some time in their life will have to do what we sometimes refer to the phrase weathering a storm, that there's going to be some difficult time that's going to come in your life. Perhaps you've already experienced it. There may be some that are experiencing such a time right now, or there may be some waiting to come in the future. And just because you've been through one circumstance or you're going through one now doesn't mean that there aren't going to be others where you're going to find yourself in a trying situation in your life. And it can come from any sort, you know, many places in life. You know, problems can arise from the most unexpected places as well as the lowest areas that you'd expect. You know, we can have problems in school, in the workplace, problems in our home. It can come from financial problems, stresses within the family, whether it's, you know, a marital issue or problems with children and bringing them up, or perhaps, an illness or even the death of a loved one within the family. Perhaps in your work you have a difficult boss or a difficult coworker. Or maybe in school, an instructor or a professor or a teacher or some other student. Or perhaps because of someone that you have an acquaintance that if you make your beliefs known, there are obviously other Christians in the world that may not share your exact same belief and you may have contentions, or there's those that are completely opposed to it that you might have something to deal with. You know, I could go on the lengthy list, but each of you know that there's some situation in your life that you've found to be very trying, a very difficult time that you've had to deal with, a stormy time in life. And frequently we've heard, you know, through testimonies and, you know, our prayer services and our testimony services of oftentimes individuals, when they've got through those things, they found they've gained something from it, that there really was a purpose. If we have our mindset to look at things like that. And so I'd like this morning to spend some time considering the storms of life, if you will. Those times of trial, of turmoil, of uncertainty, of concern, stress. And so this morning I'm going to use a source, someone who has weathered a storm of sort. Because the 27th chapter of Acts, if you aren't familiar from the chapter, the story, it's the story of Paul's shipwreck. And so that's what I'm going to look at this morning here in the 27th chapter of Acts. And to understand this, to leading up to here to where the 27th chapter begins, at this time, Paul's a prisoner. That imprisonment's come from his beliefs, a disciple of Christ. Someone who's trying to take the gospel to the world. And because of that, he's been imprisoned. And during that imprisonment, because of the accusations against him and he felt his rights as a Roman citizen that weren't being honored, he's basically appealed to Caesar. And so he's going to need to go to Rome. And so that's how the 27th chapter of Acts opens up. But Paul is now going to have to be transported to Rome. He's being transported as a prisoner. And so I'm going to start right here in the very first verse of the 27th chapter of Acts. And it reads like this. It says, "And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band." And you notice here it says we. You know, Acts is written by Luke, and that's why it's believed that Luke was one of them who actually traveled with them during this. It says we, but we're referring to Paul here in particular. Paul's the one who's one of the prisoners that's being loaded here. And it says, "And entering into a ship of Adramyttium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, unto Aristarchus, unto Macedonia, and Thessalonica being with us. And the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed unto Cyprus because the winds were contrary. Well, at this particular time of the year, or the seasons, if you will, we don't tell here in the opening verses, but we'll find later, but actually it's identified back in verse 9, that this is going to be fall. Summer's past, and this is going to be fall. And at this particular time, because of the winds, this is what he's addressing here, is the direction that they're sailing here, talking about the winds were contrary. At this particular time of years, the winds tend to be more westerly than they are at other times of the year. In a book by called Voyage and Shipwreck, The Voyage and Shipwreck of St. Paul, there's a quote in there from an admiral, Admiral D. Samaras, as writing from near Cyprus. And he writes this: "The westerly winds invariably prevail at this season." Another individual from the same book, DePage, who is a French navigator, and he wrote this in one of his books. It says, "The winds from the west, which prevail at these places, Cyprus, forced us to run to the north." That's exactly what this ship that Paul is saying this did, is going to go to the north. Instead of going this westerly direction and leaving Cyprus to the right, the ship heads to the north, with leaving Cyprus on the left. And so this is how the 27th chapter of Acts begins here. I'd like to continue, starting to pick up where I left off with verse 5, and it reads like this: "And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, city of Lycia. And there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete, over against Salome. And hardly passing it came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia." Well, without, you know, going to all the specifics of these little cities and stuff here, you know, what it comes down to is they're having a difficult time with these winds. They're bouncing around all over the place, just trying to gain some headway. And so, as it said here, verse 7, had sailed slowly many days, you know, slowly. It's taken them many days, and they've really covered very little ground, because the whole way they've had to battle these winds that really aren't favorable to the direction that they're wanting to go. So they're kind of bouncing around these different cities trying to work their way to their final destination. And so that brings us up to here in verse 9, where it says, "Now when much time was spent," so even more time, before it was slowly over many days, and now much time has been spent, "and when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them." Now, this is where we get the idea that this happened to be in the fall, along with this idea of these prevailing winds not being favorable, as history records at this particular time. And in the fall, the winds aren't favorable to the direction that they wanted to go. Also, this fast that Paul is addressing here is believed to be the fast for the Day of Atonement, one of the Jewish feasts that come in the fall. And so that's what I was referring here, is when this fast has now come to pass, and it's now a dangerous time. For a couple reasons it's dangerous. First off, it identifies the time frame, what fall and the winter starting to approach, and with that the winter storms that would come with it, the winds not being favorable, but also the Jewish tradition, the belief that beginning with the fast for the Day of Atonement and the festivals that would follow, which is the Feast of the Tabernacles, was a time to be gathering in, not to be going out. It was against Jewish tradition during this time, these festivals in the fall, from the Day of Atonement to the Feast of the Tabernacles and then the Feast of Pentecost. It was a time for them to be coming in together, not to be going out and separating themselves. And so verse 9 here says Paul is going to warn them. It says Paul admonished them. And in verse 10 it says, "And he said unto them, Sirs..." Now remember, this is a prisoner. Paul is a prisoner being transported here. And it says, "And he said unto them, Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading of the ship, but also of our lives." So Paul's giving a warning, you know. Already they've spent a great deal of time. So it's been many days. It's been very slow. They've been going from port to port, struggling to get to their final destination, trying to get to Rome so Paul can appear before Caesar. And Paul's saying, you know, this is a dangerous course to take. It's going to have a lot of harm, a lot of hurt, and loss. Well, remember, Paul's a prisoner. He's not a sailor. And his words aren't going to be hearkened to. As we find here in verse 11, it says, "Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in," you know, just wasn't a good place for them to spend the winter, they don't want to stay there. They want to find someplace better to be. It says, "The winter, the more part advised to depart thence, also by any means they might attain to Phoenix, and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close to Crete." And so there's a brief lull. The winds aren't quite as bad, and they don't want to stay where they're at. And so Paul's words aren't listened to, and they set sail. But as it continues, it says, "But not long after thence arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon," if I'm saying that right. Basically, that's just a name of a specific wind that is common in that area. Depends what scholars you look at, exactly which direction the wind comes. There's little dispute. But they all agree that it's not the direction that Paul and his ship's wanting to go. It says, "And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive." They can't steer the ship. The winds are so bad, they're just letting the wind blow the ship. There's no longer, they can't fight it. They can't go against the wind. They're just going to let the wind drive it the direction of the wind. They no longer can do anything else about it. They're at the whim of nature. "And running under a certain island, which is called Claudia, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksand, struck sail, and so were driven." As if it's not bad enough, they're unable to steer the ship. Now they're kind of to the point where it says they used helps. What that is like ropes or straps that they go from one side of the ship underneath the hull to the other side, and they tighten them down to hold the ship together. That's their sole purpose. They're afraid the ship's going to break apart, and so they're trying to support it in some way to keep it from tearing itself apart. Dean Hawson, in his book, Navigation and Ships of the Ancients, wrote this, "In consequence of extreme danger to which the ships of the ancients were exposed from leaking, it was customary to take to sea as part of their ordinary gear undergirders, which were simply ropes for passing around the hull of the ship and thus preventing the planks from starting." In other words, peeling away from the framework. As that ship is beat and buffeted by the waves and it flexes and the wood's straining, you know, and it's nailed to the inside frame, put something on the outside to hold the planks to the frame. "And they struck sail." The winds are so bad, it's just going to tear the sails and the mast apart. They just struck the sails. They took them down. And they're a cork bobbing around out there without direction to wherever the waves are going to toss them. Now, bear in mind, this isn't some huge ocean liner out here. But it's not a little rowboat either. We're going to find later that it's holding 276 people. So it's a relatively decent-sized boat, if you will. But nothing compared to the storm that they're in. And this is being described as a horrible storm. I don't know how bad it was, but easily, you know, you can imagine things that, you know, waves 10, 15, 20 feet or more. And you're in this boat bobbing around up there, rising with it and dropping that same amount and rolling from side to side. Verse 18, it says, "And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest." You know, tossed. I mean, he's describing exactly like that, like a cork bobbing around out there in these huge waves, being tossed with a tempest. The next day they lightened the ship. "And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship." So now they're the third day in the storm, and they're starting to throw overboard everything that they don't need. Anything they can do to lighten the ship and keep it more buoyant. And then verse 20, and when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. Verse 20 here is a verse of absolute and complete hopelessness on their part. Perhaps you remember watching the news last year. What was it, like 3 or 4 hurricanes that hit the Florida area and the devastation? I mean, they found boats, you know, laying, you know, inland and trees and houses and everything leveled. And, I mean, that's terrifying enough to be on land and experience something like that. This may not be quite to that level of hurricane, but imagine being in this boat where you've done everything you can and everything has failed. You can no longer steer it. You've taken down the sails. You've thrown overboard everything you possibly think you can to get it to be lighter, to stay afloat. You've tried to strap whatever you can to it to keep it from coming apart. You don't even know where you're at anymore because you haven't seen the sun or the stars for days. You don't even have any clue where you're at. Imagine that, besides the up and down going sideways. And I'm going to guess that there's probably a lot of these people weren't sailors, and maybe even the sailors, you know, they're prisoners. There's probably a lot of people getting sick. This is not a pleasant place to be. There's probably people screaming, crying. I'm sure this boat that's made out of lumber is creaking and groaning, you know, probably deafening noises as this lumber tries to strain and keep itself together. The howling of the wind, the waves crashing upon it. I think it was our brother Gordon. Didn't you once tell us that one time you were out in a storm in a vessel and you said, "Let's want to go out and look at the waves," and that wasn't the wisest thing to do? Almost got washed overboard? They've done everything they can, and weighing everything in the balances, they've decided their chances of survival is zero. Complete hopelessness. There's nothing they can do. Not thing one. However, in the midst of this complete hopelessness, this darkness, this turmoil, in their midst is a man of faith. Remember, there's 200, we haven't got to the numbers, but we're going to get to it. It's going to tell us later. There's 276 people aboard this vessel. And they're filled with dread and hopelessness. They're thinking at any moment that this ship they're on is going to break apart and sink to the bottom of the sea, taking them with it. And right when all seems darkest, after all hope is given up, we're going to find that God is going to send an angel to Paul to tell them that they are going to live through this. The ship and its cargo are going to be lost, but every person on board that vessel will be saved. Paul has this divine appointment to keep, and God's going to make sure that he keeps it. Now, this sounds like wonderful news. But who's going to believe Paul? He's not a sailor. You know, they didn't believe him before. There's no indication anywhere in the verses we're going to read that anyone saw this angel other than him. But let's see what happens. Picking up here again in verse 21, it says, being after long abstinence, and this is talking about going without food, and I can't imagine under these circumstances that there were a whole lot of people eating at this point. Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer." Can you imagine? Be of good cheer. I mean, your ship's about to be lost. Your lives are about to be lost. There's nothing you can do. And here's this individual comes up, "You know, I told you so." But be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. "For there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, 'Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told to me. Howbeit we must be cast upon a certain island.'" Well, first off, Paul reminds them, you know, you should have listened to me in the first place, or we wouldn't even be here. could have avoided this whole thing, but there's still hope. And I'm going to discuss a little bit more about that. That's an important thing. I want us to remember that. So kind of stick that in the back of your mind, this idea that, you know, Paul already went to him once before. He was ignored. But now he's returning to them. And he's going to give them some hope. Besides that, he calls them basically, really, if you look up this word of good cheer, it means to have courage. It really doesn't mean to be happy. It means to take heart, to have courage, to have some faith, to have some belief in something here. And he admonishes them to depend upon God. And as we continue here, verse 22. Actually, I want to reread here. Verse 22, I'm going to go back and reread this. And I want us to look at some of these points of what he's doing. Because what he's doing is really three things. First off, he's got people that are completely hopeless. And he's going to give them some hope. But then he's also going to ask some courage, you know. Give them some hope and ask of them some courage to do something. And he's going to tell them that, but to do this, you're going to have to believe in God. It says here in verse 22, "And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship." Everyone, you're going to lose this ship, so don't worry about it, trying to save it. But everyone on board is going to survive. "For there stood by me this night the angel of God, of whose I am and whom I serve." The angel of God, that I belong to this God, and this is the God I serve. And it's under his authority that I'm standing here speaking before. You didn't hear me, Paul, the man, before, but now this is the God that I serve and whom I belong, who has sent his messenger, an angel, and now I'm delivering that message unto you. And he tells them, saying, "Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar." God had a plan, and Paul's going to get to Caesar, and none of this stuff is going to stop it. "And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee." And so as kind of a bonus, he's going to save everyone else in this vessel that'll hear Paul. "Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told to me." You know, at times, when we put this all together, I'm going to try to apply it to our lives. And hope you're already kind of picking up some of the elements in it also. Because at times in our lives, we're going to find that we're the sailors. And I believe many times God calls us in the times of trial and life to be the Pauls of the world. Probably many times we can identify these stresses and these trials in life where you felt like the sailors and you're hopeless. But I believe there's many times where we're called in those situations to be the Paul. Here are these individuals. They had come to their ability to find any way to escape this situation. They had completely come to the end of their strength. They've come to the end of their hope. As far as they're concerned, they are helpless, they are powerless, and they are out of options. There was nothing else they could even imagine doing to save themselves. Maybe that sounds familiar. Maybe you've been in a situation in your life where, you know, there's no way you can figure to get out of it. It may not be bobbing around in the sea on a vessel, but some situation in your life that, you know, some mess, some trial, some turmoil, and you don't see any way out of it. But we have to remember that as Paul was saying, this angel said, God has a point and a purpose to accomplish. And God had brought them to this point. And maybe some sit in this room this morning that right now, it's God bringing you some point, some trial in your life. Because God knows, I think, in some degree or another, that we all need some type of storm in our life. At some point in our life, we need to find ourselves basically at our wits' end from time to time to bring us to a reminder of who He is and who's really in control. Now, because we forget that sometimes, you know, we don't really realize it till we get to some point where things really are out of control in our lives and we have to realize that we need help from somewhere else. Let's realize sometimes we find ourselves, you know, at our wits' end are some of the greatest learning and teaching moments that we can have in our lives. I think to some degree or another, it's a point that everyone will find themselves at some point in their lives. And the question is really, what will we do when we find ourselves there? When we find ourselves buffeted by the storms of life? Let's consider these sailors here. Back here in verse 27. It says, but when the 14th night was come, 2 weeks now. For 2 weeks they've been in this storm. When the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded and found 20 fathoms. In other words, it says what this here is saying there. Where is it? Missed it. Anyways, they sounded, meaning, you know, they're sent out, they're listening for echo, basically, come back. This is before radar. This may surprise you, you know. So they're making some now, whatever they're using to make noise, and they're listening for some echo and coming back. And then they drop these ropes to see how deep the water, and they find the water is echoing. It actually hits the bottom, the water is getting shallower. So they're getting close to coast. But this is how bad it is. It's dark. Well, in this case, it's midnight. They haven't seen stars. They have no idea where they're at. But they believe they're getting close to land because the water is getting shallow. And when they'd gone a little farther, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. The water's getting shallower. They're getting closer to something. Then, fearing lest we should fall upon the rocks, they cast 4 anchors out the stern and wished for the day. They don't know where they're at. They know they're getting close to land. They can't see, and they don't want to go any farther and be dashed upon the rocks. So they start throwing. They throw 4 anchors out, trying to hold this vessel here. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, they're going to abandon ship. This is how bad. So they're ready to try to get to land. They don't even know where they're at. They can't see it. But they're ready to flee out of the ship. And when they had let down the boat into the sea under the color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. Did you hear what just happened there? Paul, the individual that when they started, they didn't want to listen to. At his word, they just cut away and let go of the lifeboat. This is where Paul's come in their lives now. The only last little inkling of hope they have, that they know there's somewhere out there, there's shore, the water's getting shallow. The only thing that they humanly think is get in this lifeboat and try to get towards the direction we've been going. And Paul says, no, you do that, you're going to die. You have to stay here. And they said, okay. And they just cut the lifeboat away and let it fall into the water. And then Paul continues to intervene. It says, and while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat. In other words, to eat. Saying, this day is the 14th day that you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. And I don't know, there's different views on this, whether they haven't eaten, whether a true fast because they're really beseeching God, or they haven't eaten just because they aren't able to. I mean, they're sick, they're on the ship in the storm. But whatever the thing, for 14 days in the storm, they haven't eaten. And Paul says, you know, you need to take some food here. You have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore, I pray you take some meat, for this is for your health. For there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then they were all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. And we were all in the ship. Here's where we get our numbers. 216 souls, 276 people. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. Well, Paul not only gives us admonishment, you know, he takes action and sets an example where his faith is. Even here, sitting in a storm still, bobbing around here in this vessel, it takes time to give thanks. He says, in their presence, they made sure it was seen. He didn't go out, he didn't take his section and go off somewhere, hide in the corner. It says he gave thanks to God in presence of them all. He made sure that everyone saw. Now, I'd like to interject here. Keep your place here. We'll come back to Acts here. Go over to the 107th Psalm. And I want to start here in the 23rd verse. " They that go down to the sea in ships, that do business in the great waters. These see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. For he commandeth and riseth the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves thereof. They mount up to the heaven, they go down again to the depths. Their soul is melted because of trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like drunken men or at their wits' end. Then they cry unto the Lord in their trouble, and he bringeth them out of their distresses. He maketh the storm a calm, so the waters thereof are still. Then they are glad because they be quiet, so he bringeth them unto their desired haven. Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men. Let them exalt him also in the congregation of the people and praise him in the assembly of the elders. Kind of summation of what men go through when they're in their trials of life. Tells us back here in Acts, picking up here in this 39th verse, it says, and when it was day, they knew not the land. I mean, they don't know where they're at. They just know they're just happy that they're close to land. But they discovered a certain creek with a shore into which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust the ship. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart struck fast and remained immovable, but the hinder part was broken up with the violence of the waves. And so they run it in where the bow of the ship just drives itself into the ground, and the waves keep pounding back that it's just tearing the rear, the stern of the ship apart. That's how strong the waves are pushing. When the front couldn't move anymore, the waves have enough force that it's just breaking this vessel apart. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first in the sea and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. You know, frequently we probably find ourselves sailors in the storm, like these individuals here. And you can read yourself into there however you want, because I'd like to look at the other element here. How many times in the storm has God called you to be Paul and you missed the opportunity? We're living in a nation, a city, a society that's in a moral storm. Are you willing to be Paul? We're living in a nation and people and individuals are surrounded that are being buffeted by the winds of this world. That they're in a perilous situation. Hopeless, many. Not knowing the course of where they're going or how they're going to get there. Friends, students, co-workers, family members, you know. There's many sitting here that, you know, have family members that aren't a member of the church. And maybe are members that are maybe struggling in their spiritual needs and their walk with the Lord. Are you willing to tell them their errors when that opinion isn't popular? You know, I told you to remember something back that Paul told them that when he went to them a second time, he says, you know, I warned you and you didn't have to be in this circumstance if you'd listened to me. That sounds like kind of a big, I told you so. But when you're talking about what God's commandments are and what's righteous, we're called to do that. And it's far more effective when you voice the concern, even if it was unheard, even if you were ridiculed, even if you were persecuted for it, that when they begin to realize that, you know, things aren't going the way I want, and I am in a difficult situation, to remember, well, you know, this individual, before it ever started, warned me that this is what would happen. Then after, you don't say anything, and then after they're in the difficult situation, and you come over and say, well, you know, I kind of suspected this is what happened. Well, anyone can say anything after the fact. When beforehand you've stood, like Paul did, he's warned, says, you know, I told you that this could have been avoided. You didn't have to be in this situation to start with. But that's not the way God works, and that's not the way we're called just to leave it there with, you know, and I told you so. It's supposed to come out with this idea, you know, that God does have a plan. He does have commandments. He does have directions that are heeded. You can avoid these things. You didn't listen to that, and so you're in this situation, but. And remember what it was Paul did? When he told them that, you know, he didn't have to be here, But he gave them first hope. And that's what we're called to do to a world that's in a storm, is to give first hope. And then he gave them courage, and they told him what he needed to do to put their faith in God. And that's what we're called to do. I believe we're called to be like Paul, to realize, you know, that we are in a stormy situation, not necessarily of our own doing. You know, Paul was a prisoner when he got on board that vessel. And as we're prisoners. We are prisoners of Christ. We belong to him, and we get taken where he calls us to go to. And sometimes that's not where we want to be, and that's not where of our own choosing. And as such, you know, we're different. We're different than the world, or at least should be. And so we should find this turmoil, you know, that when other people want to do things, you know, that's not things we want to do. When other people want to say things or talk about things we don't find appropriate, you know, we aren't happy with that. And we should feel uncomfortable at a lot of things that we see on television, in the movies, and things that we're exposed to. Because we're not a part of that. But we should be able to look like Paul and see where those things are leading to. Just like Paul, when he found himself suddenly on the ship and he saw the warning signs and said, you know, this is leading to something that's not good. And that's what we're called to do when whether it's our co-workers, whether it's students, friends, neighbors, family members, you know, when, you know, this is not leading to something good. Were they here or not? If you've said that later, when they get to a point where they begin to realize, you know, this isn't where I want to be in my life. Hopefully they'll take a lot more heed, just like these individuals with Paul that he went to and said, you know, you didn't listen to me the first time, but now if you're going to, here's what we're going to do. And they found those things to become true. And as they found those things that he was saying to become true, and then he demonstrated it. You know, he didn't go off and hide in the corner. It says, you know, right in the presence of God, he was giving thanks. And bear in mind that this was still during the storm. They're still bouncing around. The wind's still howling. And somehow in all that turmoil, he finds time, you know, to prayerfully give thanks. To the point where they've went from not listening to him at all, to not avoiding the pitfalls, to not avoiding the storm, to the point where the only last resort they have is this lifeboat, and Paul says, no, don't go in. They say, fine. They just cut it and let it drop. And turn to him, what do? How many times throughout history has the outcome come to rest on a few or even one individual? That individual that has that courage to stand up and do what God has called and asked him to do. You know, David, when one giant terrorized the whole nation of Israel, who could stand and say, you know, who is this Philistine? Esther, on behalf of her nation, save them. Nephi, when he sent back to get the plates from Laban, if you remember, that didn't go very well. But he stood for what he knew he'd been directed to do. And he challenged his brothers. They beat him with rods, it said. But he stood firm in his storm. I imagine it was a storm in his life. His brothers disagree with him. They offered their riches. They got robbed and chased out. Now his brothers are beating him with sticks. He's in a storm of life. But he told them right at the beginning, you know, this is what God said we're going to do, and we are going to accomplish. Like Paul, he says, you know, this is what God has said, and it's going to happen. You know, our nation is in a storm with people looking for a haven. You know, if we hide our light, you know, they will remain in darkness. We are called to be that light and to give the warning of the dangerous paths that they're on. When that advice is rejected, you know, we have to be ready to stand, to give hope, to build courage and generate faith when they find that those rejected paths lead them to perilous times. And then we have to be willing to act to recover the battered, the weary from the storm, This is now that Paul, his work is going to begin here, because now all of a sudden he's got 276 people, their vessel gone, beached on this land. All their possessions gone. All their provisions, not possession, that too, but their provisions gone, left there. Frequently, we will find ourselves in the storm. But we have to be wary in the storm. Is God calling us to be something more than a sailor? Is God calling us to stand firm like Paul? To not get distracted by the waves, the wind, the ship falling apart around you? To not be distracted by the hopelessness and the depression that's surrounding them? Because sometimes God's called us to go into the storm. Sometimes the storm isn't coming upon us for us to learn a lesson. Sometimes the storm's there so that we can save someone else. Sometimes we have to go into someone else's storm and be the strength. Paul could have sat there very quietly and not said a word and prayed, God, you know, spare me, just let me live. Do whatever you want the ship and the rest of the people. That's not what happened. He gave the warning, it wasn't heeded. And then when he saw the opportunity, he stood to say, you know, what I said before, you're realizing is true. But no matter how bad the storm, I belong to a God that can save everyone from the worst of the storms, the darkest of the night, and the most hopeless of situations. If you but listen to his words and listen to his message and have faith and believe and then be willing to act on that. Thank you.